unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach on this Saturday, April 11th, the year of our Lord, 2015. Starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure.
All right, that's right.
We got
wondering.
It right this time. We had to... I want to put a little pause in there so we could synchronize. You know, we're talking about the sinking markets.
Right.
We had to synchronize our voice.
Yes.
So that worked out really
well.
We're
now in sync. Don't turn the faucet on.
That's right. We're now in sync. Hey, for whatever it's worth, around the world, global markets are at or near, this is really scary, at or near their records they set in 2000, including the euro in the eurozone and across Europe. Around, you know, we tend to think here in the United States that our stock market indices are about as good as they get.
Well, even in London, they have the same opinion about their own.
The Japanese
managed
to get up around 20,000
in the Nikkei.
In the Nikkei, whatever that is, which they hit when we hit 2000. By the way. So they're all the way back to when the market was at 2,000 in the United States.
It's,
but they're slipping back into repression or recession or whatever.
We're
it is
at 18,000 now. They're at 20,000. When we were at 2,000, they were at 20,000.
Yeah, yeah. They've talking about time travel. They have frozen in time.
Yeah. I was at a gathering, and one of the questions for somebody that was talking about the Federal Reserve is, why is it that we should try so hard to continue to grow our economy? Why shouldn't we just stay right where we are and take care of things? And that I didn't realize that that was a question that people had in their minds. I didn't realize that that was something that people would consider, that the status quo is all we need. We don't need any more.
There are a lot of people who think that would be cool.
The answer, my friends, is blowing in the winds.
The answer, my friends.
Yes.
It's blowing in the wind.
People have babies. In the United States, we're having more babies than we're having 2.1 babies per couple. Okay, so
mostly it's the women who are having the babies.
Well, yeah, mostly it's the women. The guys need to get with it. Statistically, you're falling behind. You're not having enough babies, guys.
That's it, exactly.
All right, so.
Talking about increasing productivity.
Right. I mean, that's good productivity there. Be fruitful. So even if we're only looking at the growth of our own population rather than immigration, and there I know realize that immigration is a big topic for a lot of people, but not talking legal immigration here, we have a growth in the United States of our population of about 1-2% a year. It's kind of important that we have a growth in our economy of 1-2% a year just to keep the status quo. Otherwise, people get poorer over time.
Yeah, we'd hope we get a little better than that. Like
yeah, so if we do better than that, then we're actually making progress. It means that today you may be able to afford a better car than you did 20 years ago. Okay? Growth is good. If I went as an employer, if we went as an employer to our staff and said that we believe that growth is not necessary in the U.S. economy, we are only going to pay you this wage and only this wage forever, I don't believe our employees would be very happy.
I hadn't thought about that, but that's probably true. Hey, Switzerland did a first in the history of at least the modern world, and nobody has any records for that. The Swiss did something.
Does it have
this
to do
last
with
week?
Clocks?
That, no.
Does it have to do with chocolate?
But it had to do something with numbers, though.
Not clocks, not chocolates.
Right.
Not the guards at the Vatican. So it must be banks.
Close.
Oh, okay.
The Swiss government, actually.
Oh, the Swiss government. Okay.
Yeah. Switzerland became the first nation in recorded history to sell 10-year treasury securities at a negative yield.
As a matter of fact, I saw that.
If you want to be right on top of it, you can buy a 10-year equivalent. It's a Swiss treasury note.
Uh-huh.
At a guaranteed interest rate of a negative 0.055%, which means they guarantee You will receive back less than you invested 10 years in the future if you wait for maturity.
This has a great potential in my mind.
Yeah, I like it.
I would really like to get my mortgage refinanced in Switzerland. They would pay me to loan me money.
This is it in the United States. if you're one of the people who got a 3% mortgage in the United States.
Right.
And you have a typical tax bill like certain people I know intimately that equates to about one-third of your income. In other words, by the time I pay as a business owner, because of the peculiarities of cash flow and all that kind of stuff,
and
I will tell you that
self-employment taxes are real.
Over the years, I have noted that if I just take all the money I make, subtract out the obvious expenses and send a third to the government.
It's good.
I'm
good
right
number.
There. 30% or
right.
a third. Okay.
Right.
And so, presuming I had a 3% mortgage, mine is actually 3 point something.
Ooh, you get to deduct.
I get to deduct
the interest that you pay on the mortgage.
So what that really
1/3 of that
right.
isn't real.
So it really boils down to the fact that I'm only paying 2%. Now this is the interesting point.
Uh huh.
The Federal Reserve's goal, their purpose in life, their objective,
one of their mandates
is to hit a 2% inflation rate, which I kind of think they will go a little over just for safety. So if inflation over the next 28 years or however long my mortgage runs for runs just over 2%, the mortgage company will be paying me to have borrowed money from them. Net.
Well,
net of
sort
taxes.
Of. Yeah, net of taxes.
Yeah, because if it runs 3%, by the way, our long-term, really long-term inflation rate, going back a century or so in the United States, is 3%. So if we hit the 3% point.
You're really getting money paid back to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I'm.
You're making 1% on your mortgage every year.
So this is one of those really fascinating issues. This is one of the, and we've seen this happen before in history. Although Treasury securities weren't being issued by at that point at negative interest rates because they just didn't do that at that point. The idea of issuing a Treasury security at a negative interest rate is a modern innovation of finance.
Yes, because if you think back about why anyone would want to loan their money to someone, I'm going to loan you this money for you to use in your budget.
Well,
and I'm going to pay you to take it from me.
And here's the real kicker. If you were...
This has happened before, by the way.
If you were depositing money at the central bank in Switzerland, the Swiss National Bank, and let's say you said, man, I really want my money to be secure, and I'm going to buy the Swiss franc, and I'm going to put my money in the bank, and that way it'll be really, really secure, they will happily pay you a negative 0.75% a year. Did you get that? They will remove 0.75% from your account each year as fees on an ongoing basis if you have money deposited in the bank.
Well, I have to tell you that this isn't the first time that it's happened. If you go back in time in your head to Leroy, our good friend Leroy.
Leroy?
Leroy. Actually known as Leroy, Louis the 14th.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, Louis XIV. Why don't you say his name right? His name is Louis XIV.
Yeah, Louis XIV. I call him Leroy because that's what his title was. They called him Leroy,
okay.
Which means the king.
Right,
but I like to call him Leroy. He used to...
Was his last name Brown?
No, he was a bad...
But he was the baddest guy in the whole damn town. I mean,
this is part of the reason why people paid him money to give him loans is that he would show up on their door, or his soldiers would, and say, you will give the crown a loan, and you will pay the crown a tax to give the crown a loan, and I will give you an IOU that I will pay it back to you, but I will not actually pay it back to you.
But he was the guy who lost his crown.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
But it's not the first time in history that... that national governments have charged people money to
to deposit money.
To get deposits.
But they didn't, they weren't issuing 10-year, they didn't have a central bank that was issuing 10-year treasuries.
No, he was saying I would pay it back in 10 years, though, over a 10-year period. That was the whole goal, that Leroy was very impressed with his ability to do just about anything. And
yeah,
that included taking money from people as a loan.
He was indeed badder than a junkyard dog.
He showed up and he said, "You're going to give me a loan now." "Oh, no, I'm not." "Yes, yes, you are. And not only that, you're going to pay me to do it."
Well, wait a minute. Isn't that the way the IRS works?
It is a little bit like that. Only the IRS can't just come and take it if you don't owe it. Well, not all the time anyway. Sometimes they can. You had a ruling. Let me throw out a ruling that they did a couple of months back. And
I haven't told them about the really cool ruling.
The ruling they did a couple of months back said that they would no longer confiscate bank account balances of U.S. Taxpayers, and that includes legal immigration types, if they knew that the cash balances in those bank accounts were acquired legally and taxes were being paid on them. Before that, they were doing it.
But if they didn't know it.
Yeah, if they didn't know it, they would still continue to do it. And it has to do with.
So they just find somebody who has a blindfold on who can't see it.
No, what they used to do, and still do to some extent, is if you make deposits, repeated deposits over a week that total up to be more than $10,000 over that whole week, you have violated a part of the Patriot Act that's called the structuring part of the Patriot Act. You are money laundering. Even though it's legal money and you're not legally money laundering it, it is the same thing that money laundering looks like. So they're allowed to seize the assets until they see fit to give them back.
You know, I have been looking for that for years.
For what?
Fit.
Fit?
People say until I see fit.
Until they see fit? Yeah.
And I've not found fit.
Well, I've thrown some fits.
Okay. Well, but you threw them and I didn't see them.
No, I'll throw some more and maybe you'll see them.
Okay.
What's the new ruling?
The ruling from the Internal Revenue Service, as my mother used to call it.
Yes.
Is that if you have a 401k plan and you have made deposits into your 401k plan.
Uh-huh. Most people do that when they have 401ks.
Yeah, that are non-tax deductible. In other words, by the
after
way.
After tax.
For example, and this is just, and it changes, so don't. Consult with your tax whoever, but you can put typically up to $53,000 a year of non-deductible money into a 401k. Now, why would you want to put non-deductible money into a 401k?
Well, the earnings can grow tax deferred.
Right.
That's
so,
kind of nice.
And you can have it pulled out of your pay and stuck into the 401k. Now, the problem, and one of the reasons people didn't do this in the past, is because when you roll over your 401k, you can't divide out that money. You can't separate that money that you have. I call it ABT, already been taxed money.
Yeah.
So that when you start to withdraw money, you have to withdraw all the money you haven't paid taxes on first before you get to the return of principal at the bottom where you don't have to pay taxes, which means you probably won't live that long. The ruling was, when you roll over a 401k, you can separate out the money on which taxes have already been paid and roll it into a Roth IRA.
Oh, that's nice.
So you can separate that out, and let's just say you had, let's say you had $200,000 in your 401k.
Well, that means that you can
put $50,000 of that.
Man,
have been deposited.
That means you can put more money into your Roth when it's not a Roth than you can in your Roth.
You're right. You can't put that much money in a Roth.
You can't put that much money in a Roth.
And it really comes out of the fact that there is such a thing as a Roth 401k now that can be rolled into a Roth. And they interpreted the rules saying, oh, yeah, okay, you can have a Roth 401k, so you can roll it into a Roth. Therefore, the money you put into your regular 401k. Now, you can't roll the earnings on that money
Correct.
Into your Roth.
That's got to stay
you
in
have,
the original.
You just roll your principal over all the money you earned on the money that you did pay taxes on. It's getting complicated.
Yes.
Well, there's it has to go into the regular IRA. So
this is another thing. Because Roth IRAs and Roth 401ks are relatively new, there's something that a lot of – I got this question this week. So it's funny that you brought this up. What happens to my 401k when I roll it over? It's a Roth 401k. Why is it that two accounts are being made here? inside your Roth 401k, if your employer is making any contributions at all, if they're matching you or if they're hitting at the end of the year, they're putting in a certain amount of money for you, that's going into a traditional 401k. Mm-hmm. And your money's going into a Roth 401k. And on your statement, it's all mixed together. But when it goes to the rollover time, when you're no longer working at that company anymore, you are now rolling it over into your individual retirement account. You have to have two accounts, one for your contributions and earnings and one for the employer's contributions and earnings. And that is a little bit more complicated, but not really. It's just saying these are the different types of taxes. And this is how I answered that person. And I would really, really like to not have to worry about tax implications when it comes to investments. We've got a great management technique. We've got styles. We've got science. We can manage stuff. And when taxes get involved, man, things get complicated. Sure would be nice if we could get that simplified. Hint, hint
you
to
are,
the representatives out there.
Yeah, likely.
It's unlikely that we're going to get any simplification anytime soon.
You are, by the way, listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And our telephone numbers, if you're in East Bell County, you can call in today, presuming that this is Saturday, April 11th, and this is not a rerun. It is 773-1400. Otherwise?
1-866-597-1400.
Anywhere else in the sound of his voice.
And your voice, too.
I don't know.
Our voices together.
Could be. Anyway, what else is going on in the big wide world? It's an interesting thing about the United States.
What is? That it has states?
We get so wrapped around the taxes, and this is one of those things that you're talking about.
Right.
The rest of the world, as a matter of fact, that have income taxes, do not get the governments do not get the majority of their money from income taxes. In the United States, our federal government gets the majority of its money from income taxes. Income tax rates, for example, in Europe are about half the income tax rates in the United States, which is, of course, one of the reasons that companies like to leave their money over there.
Right.
Why? How do they get by with that?
Because they have other things that they charge.
They have the equivalent of a national sales tax, which is called value-added tax.
It's really not a national sales tax the way we would implement it, because
right,
it's a nasty, complicated, messy thing, just like our tax code.
You don't think our national sales tax would be a nasty, complicated thing?
I think anything Congress touches becomes a nasty, complicated thing.
So what they do is they have the majority of their revenue in European countries, for example, and for that matter in other countries too, like Japan, comes from a value-added tax. So when a company makes something and they increase the value and they pass it to a middleman and he increases the price, they pay a tax on the difference between what they paid for something, their total expense for something,
right,
and what they got when they sold it. So it's called a value-added tax. And you basically, at each level along the way.
Only in this case, there's one technical issue here.
What's that?
Sometimes there's no sale involved. Sometimes a company gets the wood, makes a desk, and transfers it on to another company for later sale. If that happens, if they're going to get paid for it in another year, the value-added tax is added this year.
Uh-huh.
So which is
but
a little bit weirdness.
Basically, if you increase the value of something and you put a dollar number on it or euro number on it or whatever you're doing.
They're using euros over there for some reason.
Some of them. Or pound number on it.
Right.
Which means if you made the desk more heavy, it would be more pounds.
There's a lot of pounds involved
but
here.
Actually, they make the desk less heavy, so they should pay a negative tax, but that's beside the point.
Right.
The point is that they get most of their government revenue from value-added taxes, where in the United States we get most of our government revenue from the income tax. And that's weird. In fact, this is an interesting point. It would far less distort the business of investing if we had a value-added tax.
Sure would. A sales tax, when it comes to investing, is just a better way, even when it's complicated and messy like what the Europeans have done.
But the chances of us getting a value-added tax in the United States are slim to none because the Republicans don't want to cut income taxes and throw in a value-added tax, which is like a sales tax again, and
right,
that you don't have to pay it until you buy something.
Yeah, well, the reason why they don't want to do it is because they're afraid that as soon as they do it, both of them get raised back up to high limits.
They don't want a new tax because they're concerned somebody might raise it.
You don't want to add a new tax without getting rid of the old tax.
And the the Democrats say it is anti-progressive in that it's
the same percentage paid for an item purchased if you're poor or if you're rich.
Yeah, poor people pay the same as rich people.
Which really doesn't make sense.
It's already true with sales taxes.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense because rich people just buy a lot more stuff. So that means they, as a percentage of their income, they pay for a lot more stuff.
Well, actually, rich people spend less of their money.
They spend less
of
a...
They invest more of their
money. Wait. They spend less as a percentage. They spend a lot more as a dollar number, so their taxes are much higher.
So,
this is where the economists can sit and argue back and forth. Is this real numbers, or are you talking about percentages here?
Well, it's whether you're talking about nominal or net or inflation
adjusted. I'm talking about real.
I like nominal. Actually, I don't like nominal. I like real. Yeah, real. Real is non-nominal.
I like mana.
So when you see the numbers and they're all out there, you say, well, we don't like those numbers because they're not real numbers. Actually, they're not imaginary numbers, but they aren't real numbers.
So. I need to put I on one of the things just for fun of it.
Maybe. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. We're going to take a break for commercials, and Lord willing, we'll be back on the other side. Telephone numbers in here if you'd like to call us if this is Saturday, April 11th, where you are. 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. We did it.
We did it again.
We did it again. That's pretty good. We could say our names after many, many years. Actually, ladies and gentlemen, I've spent well over half a century, over six and a half decades practicing saying my name, and I have finally learned how to do it probably, six times out of ten correctly?
If we're lucky.
That's a week. Anyway, let's see. Job openings climbed to highest level in 14 years, but hiring declines.
Yep. We had a 0.4% increase in personal income in February.
Yes, and what we're seeing is natural, normal, and of course it makes headlines as startling.
Right.
And
the reality is that most of the stuff doesn't even make headlines. It just is in the background, and people, the few nerd headlines that do leak out, people go, oh, really? What is this? What has changed? Nothing's changed.
April 7th, 2015, 10:29 a.m. Eastern Time.
Dun, dun, dun.
Job openings climbed to highest level in 14 years, but hiring declines.
Ooh.
That's an interesting concept.
Right.
And also, yes.
Job openings, that means that people are hiring.
They want to hire.
They want to hire. They're like, we're help wanted on the window. And the other side of it is
that they can't find people qualified to fill the jobs.
That's a good place to be.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd really like it if everybody was able to hire everyone that they wanted. But the reason why it's a good place to be, and the reason why I threw out that little statistic about 0.4% increase in wages, is that if you have a help wanted sign on the door and you're having trouble finding people to fill the position, it means that the positions that are already filled are more valuable.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to lose any of the people that are in those positions, so you give them more money.
We're also seeing a significant number of people leaving voluntarily their job, their work, which means they're going to another job where they get paid more.
Yeah, and that almost disappeared completely in the recession. People would not voluntarily leave their job, even if it was working at McDonald's or Starbucks, because they didn't know that there was a job waiting for them somewhere else.
So we have this natural event that goes on in the economy. By the way, these statistics, unlike the 126,000 statistics, are the kind that would probably cause the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and that's kind of a good transition.
And what we're finally starting to see is some, like Jake said, some growth in actual wages per hour in non-farm, non-supervisory personnel. They sure leave out a lot of people in that.
Right.
Anyway.
The Federal Reserve has been very consistent in what it has been announcing to the world for the past 4 years. They've been saying they want it. They would stop the quantitative easing when unemployment hit the 6% mark and dropped below it for a little bit of time. Okay, they did. Unemployment dropped below 6%. They stopped quantitative easing.
Mm.
They've been saying for the past probably year that June, they are probably going to start raising interest rates. The reason why they say things as early as they do is to avoid what we were just talking about, joking about. The headlines are going to make it sound like a surprise no matter what happens. Even though the Federal Reserve has been saying this is what we're, it looks like we're still on track for starting to raise interest rates in June. They've been saying it. I believe them. Which means that in June, when the headlines hit, Federal Reserve raises interest rates, we are going to see volatility in the market. The market is going to act like it has been every time the Fed has surprised us with things that are not surprising. So keep that in mind. And one of the issues here,
trying to keep it in mind,
part of the reason why the Federal Reserve has become so much less secretive, they used to be crazy secretive. You didn't know what was going on. If they had a meeting, nobody was allowed in. The notes were not released. No memos.
For a long time.
Yeah. The vast majority of the length of time that the Federal Reserve existed, it has been this secretive, hidden organization. People knew who were in it. They knew that the meetings were happening, but they didn't know what was going on internally. Well, the Federal Reserve's original mandate, the one that got it really started, was it's supposed to just take care of price stability. That's the buying power of the dollar. Don't make it shift around too much. We don't like high inflation. We don't like high deflation. So that was their role. So they were very secretive. They didn't want people to know what they were doing because they can affect that better when they're being secretive. Well, then they got a new mandate, and they said this new mandate is you need to keep good employment numbers going. We need you to take care of this too. So then they started a little bit to let out some of the information that they were doing, because it's good for confidence in employment if people know that the Federal Reserve is doing something. And then the third mandate got added in Dodd-Frank. Dodd-Frank, the bill after the financial regulatory reform bill, said to the Federal Reserve, you have a third mandate. We don't want huge bubbles in the stock market. We want you to try to stabilize this. That mandate is impossible.
Well,
but it was given.
It was basically they were supposed to regulate systemic shadow banks. And,
right.
And what happens is there are certain organizations in the United States that are, there's actually a special little board that figures this out, that figures out when an organization other than a bank
becomes a bank,
becomes too big to fail.
Or not just too big to fail, becomes a bank, and also there's another category.
But
so, like,
for example,
PayPal is not a bank, and yet it's considered a
right.
bank by the Federal Reserve.
It's a shadow bank.
The payroll loan places are considered shadow banks. So go ahead.
That's the reason a major event took place that is very significant when we look at what's going on in the big wide world today. Now, Jake mentioned earlier that the finance CEOs, called Wall Street, although they could be based anywhere.
Wall Street in San Francisco.
Yeah, but anyway, they are getting paid as less than other major CEOs right now.
A lot less.
If the big announcement that occurred this week was General Electric has spun off GE Capital. Now, GE Capital.
I hope they didn't get dizzy in that spinoff.
And you might say, well, okay, big deal. That's no big thing. Well, GE Capital has been around for a really long time.
It's very successful.
And during the 1990s, during the time that, I can't remember the guy's
Welch.
Name. Jack Welch grew General Electric. He didn't grow the manufacturing side of General Electric that much. What he did was convert General Electric into a major financial institution. And the vast majority of the new revenue that came in and the new sizing to the company and everything that went with it, he was extracting from GE Capital.
Yeah.
And it got to where
they started by taking over their own 401k.
Right.
Instead of having
right.
somebody else manage it, they hired people to manage it themselves. And then they said, well, we'll do this for other people.
Well, they were loaning money initially to buy their own equipment.
You're right. Yeah.
And what they could do, unlike a bank, they didn't have to take deposits and wrestle with consumers who wanted to take their money out after they made a deposit. What they would do is they would issue securities, bonds, notes, bills on the open market because of GE's excellent credit rating. They could get very, very low interest rates. And they could turn around and loan that money
at a higher interest rate
to commercial people who wanted to buy like jet engines and turbines and huge pieces of equipment. Well, then they finally figured out we could make a lot more money by charging a higher interest rate by sponsoring credit cards and issuing mutual funds and things like that.
Home Depot's even done it. If you think about any store credit place, that's a form of banking.
What they did, GE Credit was kind of one of the cornerstones, and a lot of people don't realize this. GE Credit and General Electric had to go to the Treasury Secretary and the President of the United States. General Electric did. And say, I need some money.
Yeah.
And they had to make General Electric into a bank holding company. Now, think about this for just a second. So that the Federal Reserve could loan General Electric some money. Otherwise, General Electric would have defaulted on its payments in late 2008.
Yeah.
We don't hear much about that. Yeah. But that's the kind of thing that was going on.
The Federal Reserve's not supposed to be able to give loans to companies that aren't
right.
Federal Reserve banks.
And so...
What happened with AIG, what happened with GE, these are two things where the Federal Reserve said, we've never done this before, but there's no law that says we can't do it. Well, now there's a law that says they can't do it.
So the point is, General Electric stock... In the last couple of years, 3 years or so, I don't remember the exact time frame, has fallen 20% during a period when the market was up about 20%. And the reason was the return on capital at GE Credit was lousy. Why was it lousy? Because, in other words,
giving loans to people that weren't paying them back.
No. The issue is they had been declared a systemic financial institution and were under severe pointed restrictions as to what they could do. They couldn't get wild and crazy. And previously banks couldn't get wild and crazy. Well, now GE Credit couldn't. So last week, Jeff Immelt, the CEO of General Electric, announced they were spinning off GE Credit completely. They have very, very minor financing on major purchases that are made from General Electric right now by big corporations. But what happens is I think it was $26 billion they sold. Could be wrong on that number. But they sold GE Credit.
$500 billion in assets of GE Capital over the next 2 years, including $26.5 billion worth of real estate. So it is GE Capital.
Yeah, GE Capital has been sold off.
It's selling off.
And so the process, the issue is that General Electric, and by the way, the share prices of General Electric jumped 11% when they announced they were getting rid of what in essence was their non-bank banking arm, which tells you, or tells us at least, a lot about what's going on in the economy right now.
Yeah.
That these non-bank banks that could be wild and crazy with money and loan money to anybody and at high interest rates, the Dodd-Frank law is working.
Yeah,
because really, if you think about it, a company whose main business is manufacturing big pieces of heavy equipment
shouldn't be making those loans
and putting
its shareholders in danger and putting the rest of the economy in danger.
It shouldn't be primarily a financial institution. It should be a manufacturing institution. And what happened is they, in effect, and this happened across our economy.
Not just our economy.
Banks were effective. Banks were formed with no banking regulation and no banking restrictions. These shadow banks, they're still dangerous, by the way. And the largest contributor, and we've said this over and over again, the largest non-bank bank institution as a group in the United States are the life insurance companies.
Right.
The people who try to sell you annuities or advertise.
Actually a marketing campaign for – it's called Bank on Yourself.
Which means buy a big life insurance company and
putting all of your faith and trust in one company and hoping that that company's there in 50 years when you need the money. That's a little scary.
So, matter of fact, I got an email from a client who said, what is this about 3 and 4% interest rates guaranteed. And, of course, what he's talking, what they wanted him to do, and it was a long infomercial I had to watch to figure out what it was. They want him to buy a life insurance policy on him or somebody else.
Right.
And give them 3 to 4, give them a bunch of money. And, of course, now this is the interesting thing about these. Folks, if you hear something like that, this is the point. Yeah, we'll pay you 3 to 4% interest unless you want some money. And if you want some money, you will pay, you will not, A, you will not see your interest, and B, you will see a negative 15%
right.
interest on the money you wanted back.
That's what surrender charges happen. I mean, if you've got a bank, and the bank, if you give, say, I want a 10-year CD, and you're going to get a 1% or a 2% interest rate on a CD, mm-hmm. you go, all right, that's great. This is a bank. I'm going to get this money back. It's guaranteed. Well, you need the money back before you thought you did.
Right. You pay 6 months interest.
Yeah, you don't even lose all the interest most of the time.
Right.
You lose some of the interest, and you get your principal back. And when people say bank on yourself, and then they say use an insurance product, that's not a bank. You've got lots of risks there, and that overlap is the scary place. And you said it's across our whole economy, and I said it's in other economies
yeah,
too.
That's right. It's also in Europe.
If you look at what happened to Iceland, Iceland's whole economy converted to nothing but this. They converted their entire economy, all the fishing, everything else went to finance. They said, this is great. The country of Iceland has a great credit rating. The companies in Iceland have great credit ratings. What we'll do is we'll issue bonds in the open market. We'll get cheap money based on our credit rating. We'll turn around and we'll loan that money out to these other people. Well, the problem is when those other people don't pay, then the people that gave that credit rating to Iceland, because Iceland is so good at paying, and they think they're making a safe, judicial call by loaning money to Iceland or GE or Home Depot. When the reality is that Home Depot is turning around and loaning that money to people who are not safe, intentionally so that they can get the most money back from them, then the people that thought they were making a safe contribution to a well-known institution get burned. And that's, you know, Dodd-Frank went way overboard in some ways, but this is a really good aspect of Dodd-Frank.
And linking to all of this, the latest data we have is for February, and the Federal Reserve announced that the Americans are paying off their credit cards faster than they're charging money on their credit cards.
Wow.
And have been for the last couple of months. Household spending is rising 0.1%.
So they're paying off their debts faster than they're getting them, and their income is going up.
So revolving credit,
or their spending is going
up, which is credit card debt, fell at about a 5% annualized rate in February. Now, total household debt went up slightly, but it went up for the reason of buying cars,
right?
Student loans, and things of that long term. What's called capital debt rose a little bit, but
revolving debt is not good.
People are still paying down their credit card, and anecdotally, we're seeing that. And what we're seeing across the board is the high interest. That's one of the reasons, by the way, that GE Capital was in trouble. Is I don't know if you've ever had a credit card from GE or an offer of a credit card from GE, but they had, you know, absurdly high interest rates.
29.6%.
And what they're finding is people are not biting at that. They're not willing to pay the high interest rates. They have actually become a little bit educated in this, and as a result, GE Capital wasn't making the big money off of the poor people that it was making before. I say poor people, the typical American
consumer. True. It's true that the reality is that most people that pay 29% happen to have very low income. And that's why they have the 29% charge against them. But to part of Dodd-Frank was GE Capital was what in many cases was the bank behind the credit that was being given at veterinary locations and at Sears and at Home Depot.
Really?
And
yeah.
And that, so the concept of you come in, You don't have to pay any interest. If you pay this all off over a six-month period, you have a 0%
right.
interest. And people go, oh, that's great. Well, I'll just put a little payment towards that every month. But if you even have $1 of balance at the end of that six-month period,
you get it with like a 30%.
All of the interest that would have been charged during that entire
yeah.
six-month period comes home to your debt. You owe it all. Even if you only owed $5 or $1 at the end, all of the interest payments that you didn't have to pay because you were going to pay it completely off come due. GE was very happy. The person that bought the thing at Home Depot or had their cat's leg fixed did not have the same experience.
Yeah, and I happen to like Amazon, but their Amazon credit card, if you read the fine print that they offer you, and they offer an immediate discount
right,
on stuff, and
right.
you look at the interest rates on that credit card, and it'll cause your eyeballs to quiver.
Well, see, I will, if you are disciplined at paying your credit card, I use an Amazon credit card, and we pay that thing off every month, but we do most of our shopping on Amazon
mm-hmm.
for groceries and for all kinds of other things. So
do you ever miss it?
That's the thing. You just do not miss your payment. You make those payments. You pay it completely off. You never buy more than you can pay off because if you do, you're.
But this is the problem with that.
You're losing money to them.
And you've got, a reasonably secure job. But
Could be.
But if somebody, for example, and this is the shocker that a lot of people got, is they were paying off their credit cards every month and they had high interest on them and they got
right.
these zero balance transfers and all kinds of things. And then they get laid off or they get sick or they
yeah.
or whatever happens and they lose their income and can't make that payment or can't make the whole payoff.
Right. This is why savings are so, so important.
And all of a sudden they are spiraling down into bankruptcy, not just because they don't have income, but because they suddenly get hit with these massive interest rate charges. And that's one of the things, by the way. I know you're going to think this is a little strange. This is why GE had to go to the Treasury to get money and the Federal Reserve to get money is because they were charging exorbitant interest rates. They were being loan sharks.
Yeah.
And when the economy went down,
the people that are the least likely to pay
right.
are the ones. That's the thing
about.
And
they all of a sudden weren't making their payments
right.
and they were declaring bankruptcy or just simply weren't paying.
The reality here is that, and GE was at danger here because a lot of people were investing in GE in bonds for GE. And they have a great credit rating. Their rating from S&P and all these, there's a wonderful credit rating because they've got all these assets. It's such a cool thing. Then they were turning around and loaning that money out to the riskiest of people because
mm-hmm.
nobody else is going to pay 29% of their debt. I mean, that's how you can tell when there's a lot of risk involved is by looking at the high.
You mean on their debt?
Yeah, on the desk. I mean, if somebody has $900,000 sitting in the bank and they own their house outright and they go to get to Home Depot and they want to buy $3,000 worth of stuff, they're not going to use the 29% credit card.
I've actually been looking for that aisle.
The stuff aisle?
Yeah.
Oh, I think they have stuff on. It's just not labeled well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they need to put that label on there. Anyway, that's the key, and it's true when you're talking about Puerto Rican CDs as well. If the interest rate at a bank is higher than other banks' interest rates, it's because they're riskier.
Yeah.
Even at banks, even if there's FDIC insurance, be aware of that.
There is one last story that I wanted to touch on before we finish out this week's Personal Wealth Coach. The headline, again, Wall Street Journal, April 8th, is your job routine? If so, it's probably disappearing. There's a good
robots
study.
Robots are coming.
Not just that, just across the board, without regard to not just robots, there's also computers. But
that's
fundamentally,
a
study's been made of what's happened to the jobs, what jobs are disappearing and what jobs are growing, what jobs are growing the economy and which jobs are actually shrinking the economy. Now, that sounds a little weird.
Get to
but
programming.
Anything where you don't have to make decisions, and if you're in a job where you're doing the same thing over and over again, even if you have to think about what you're doing over and over again, your job is at risk because you can be replaced by a computer, and the computer may be controlling a robot, and it just may be a computer. But the bottom line to it is, if you're in a position such as home health care where you have to go in and make decisions, critical decisions every day.
Right.
If you're, interestingly enough, if you're in the position of being a janitor where you have to make decisions about what to throw away and what not to throw away every day, you're fairly safe. But if you're in a position where you go to work, you do repetitive work all day, you don't have to think about it because there's clear rules as to what you do. You don't have to take responsibility for making decisions. The clock is ticking on your job.
Yeah.
And many of those jobs, and they do constitute a pretty good-sized chunk of the economy, many of those jobs, according to the Wall Street Journal story, are likely to disappear in the next decade. So just like the assembly line worker.
Yeah.
Used to be the ultimate secure job, and those are disappearing, have disappeared.
There are not going to be very many of those left in the near future.
The person who answers the phone and always says the same thing and then just routes the call to someplace is gone. So if you think about it, if you're in a job where you're really happy because there's a set of rules and you know exactly what you need to do and you don't have to take responsibility for your actions,
even
you are
calling people,
potentially.
Even
right.
Calling people and asking them to buy things, the tele folks, the folks that sit around in these big phone banks and call people and say, please buy this or timeshare that, they're being replaced by smarter and smarter computers
right.
that are able to ask the questions. It's getting right up there to the Turing test level in that I haven't been fooled yet.
Look,
I know of.
I got a personal call from John Carter the other day, personally.
Yeah, but he didn't answer your questions while he was on the phone.
Well, he doesn't answer questions in interviews
either.
Oh,
that's true. It's a politician thing.
I was asking him questions, and he was answering different questions.
Yeah, his job is safe because he's just...
There's nothing. Yeah, never mind.
It's kind of like
his job. Well, his job is constitutional.
Yeah. The job of Congress is the same level of security. Google's having a lot of trouble with its smart driven cars at 4-way stop signs. It's great at road construction. It's great at stoplights. It's great at all kinds of things. But at a 4-way stop sign, people don't follow any rules. They just look at each other and kind of nod at each other, or sometimes they don't even do that. Somehow we get through those four-way stop.
Telepathy.
There's not very many accidents, and Google's computers are going, whoa, there's magic happening here.
Well, yeah, and I can understand that. I saw some of just four-way stops all over where we were in Virginia, and we saw some very, very strange behavior at four-way stops. People pull up to a four-way stop, whip out their cell phone, they're looking down at their cell phone, and then just kind of slowly drift across the intersection. And everybody else would just sit there patiently. They didn't even honk at them.
Right. It's just, this is four-way stop. This is where magic happens.
So you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and this is, if it's Saturday, April 11th, you're living to it live. Otherwise, you're dead, and you don't know it. But we do exist outside of this two-hour event that happens during
radio
the week.
Broadcast,
and we have on the weekends a voicemail device that can listen to you and you can talk to it during the week, real live people answering the telephone. And if you'd like to make contact with us and say something to us or ask us for something, 947-1111 is the number in East Bell County.
You can reach that same number toll free at 800-914-PLAN. That's 800-914-7526. You can email us at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com, or you can go to thepersonalwealthcoach.com. Until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.